You've led your own bands for many, many years. Hypothetically, if you could choose to play in a particular period of your career, what period would that be?
Wow, that's a question. I don't know. The bands I played with John Sangster were recording, strictly recording bands. So I don't suppose you can, you know, include those. And with Don, probably much the same. Don Burrows, we did some tours together and a lot of gigs, but I was never a regular member of the band. I had a great time with Graham's band. I was with Graham Bell for 5 years, and we did a lot of travelling, and we worked just about every night, and it was a very satisfying experience to play with Graham. There were some very fine players in the band, one being Ken Herron, a wonderful trombone player that died quite young, but fantastic talent.
What is it you like about the cornet in preference to the trumpet?
That's funny you should say that. I'm back on the trumpet. I'm playing the trumpet again.
Are you really?
Yeah. I went onto the cornet, 30 years ago. I just like the feel of the cornet. I like the softness of the sound. It's similar to the trumpet in a lot of ways, but I try to liken it to an acoustic guitar as against an electric guitar.
Okay.
You know, with this softness about the acoustic, the electric, you seem to play differently, or the guitar players seem to play differently if they play electric and acoustic. And I think playing the cornet, I play a little bit differently than I do on the trumpet. But just recently, I picked up the trumpet again and felt good, so now I'm playing the trumpet.
Have you ever played the flugelhorn? Has that ever been a part of your...
When I was doing all the studio work, that was part of the equipment you had to... Every time you went into a gig, you had to take a trumpet and a flugel. And I played it there many times. But I never got to, experiment with the flugelhorn that much. I always felt it was a cop-out, in a way. A lot of players had a lousy tone, but they pick up a flugelhorn, they all sound good. And I thought, well, if you can't sound good on a trumpet, you know.
Yeah.
So I never really thought much about the flugelhorn.
You've described your style firmly in the mainstream, but indeed you still command the respect and admiration of many modern players in Australia. I saw Warwick Alder enjoying your Manly performance recently. He was in the crowd down
there.
That's
right, yes.
Does that surprise you at all?
It does to some extent, yes, because it's not modern phrasing, but it's original and it's inventive. And even because it doesn't sound modern, it doesn't mean it's not inventive. And they all say it's old-fashioned, but it's not old-fashioned at all. It's inventive. And, you know, I can do something on a B-flat blues that's different.
And, of course, it fits into many modern contexts very easily, doesn't it?
That's true, yes. And I'm very pleased with that remark, actually. I have had some comments from various players. It's very satisfying to know that they enjoy my playing.
John Costello, you'd fondly remember him, Bob.
Absolutely, yeah. He was a star member of my band for a long time.
You have a very lyrical way of forming a solo, Bob. When I hear you playing some music, especially out of the Great American Songbook, for example, I can almost hear you articulating lyrics in your solo. Are you singing the lyrics in your head as you're playing?
Not actually singing, no, but one of the great saxophone players from Sydney, a fellow called Ron Gowans, who was... affectionately known as Loud, he was a great lyric man, and he told me that. He said, you know, you should really learn the lyrics to a ballad to get the most out of it. And I've kind of done that.
Yes.
But I don't actually sing along in my head.
You probably know the lyrics to a lot of the... You've sung a bit yourself over the years, of course.
Yeah. only when it's absolutely
necessary. Your first band or first recording, the All Free Street Stompers, is that right?
Nearly right. That was 1952.
You had a band before that?
No, that was my first band, my under my name, yes. Right.
But you first recorded in 1948, is that right?
That's right.
Well, who was in the All Free Street Stompers, and what do you recall from that time?
My brother was in it, Len. Playing the drums and a bit of washboard, and a fellow called Warwick Dyer, who was a wonderful character and a wonderful trombone player, played with Frank Johnson's band.
Okay.
But on this occasion, he played piano. So it was piano, drums, and Nick Politis played clarinet and alto sax, and there was a quartet. And we just got together and we really, it was a jam session. It was a lot of fun. And one of the local guys, Tony Standish, decided it was a good idea to record it. We did a few concerts, and I'm glad he did, because it's a very happy music. It's kind of rough and unrehearsed, but it's good. I enjoy it.
You're a legend, really. I mean, I looked you up in the Penguin Guide to Jazz. You're referenced in that Penguin Guide to Jazz, which is about that thick, about 3 inches thick for our listeners. But you're referenced in there more times than any other Australian jazz musician. You've got the Bob Barnard Drive named after you on the Gold Coast.
You probably
know about that.
Yes, I do.
You've got mobile phone ringtones under Bob Barnard.
Is that so?
You've never really been one to self-promote yourself.
No, that's true.
But you prefer to let the music do all the talking. In this day and age, it's a little different to that.
Well, it is, yeah.
You have to do the self-promotion now.
We do gigs and it's time to take a break and you want to sell some CDs. And I always forget. We get off the stage and everyone says, "You didn't mention the CD." Oh, damn. And that should be the first thing you do.
Yeah. But, I mean, they'd just fly off the shelves anyway, wouldn't they, Bob? I mean, you're still touring over the world playing. The pace has probably slowed a little, would you say?
Yeah, well, I just, June, July, August, I was in Europe 10 weeks, which is actually a little too long. But the gigs kept coming in, and while I was there, I wanted to do them. So,
Bob, in a relatively short life, Charlie Parker once said that his style did not change after he left Kansas City and he moved to New York City. But you've been playing the cornet since the 1940s. How has your playing changed or developed over the years, do you think?
Well, I've always kept an open mind about it. I enjoy playing... the kind of music I play, of course. And I don't play things that I don't want to play. But when I say open mind, I've become more sophisticated. I worked in all the TV studio bands and the recording bands in doing jingles and so forth. And I'm a great listener. And I've become more mellow and a little bit more tolerant.
So you're listening to, in your own listening taste, for example, you're listening to a bigger cross-section of music now.
Yes.
Because I noticed you performed Seven Steps to Heaven down at Manly this year, which is a Miles Davis classic of his, and probably something that wasn't in your repertoire, even maybe 5, 10 years ago.
That's right, yeah, and I play a few bebop standards, Four Brothers and Groovin' High and things like that, and they're fun to play, and I really do enjoy it.
Well, I feel as though I've been listening to you perform since I was about this high, because my father used to take me to your concerts. I was originally from Queensland, and you'd be up in Brisbane just about every week.
That's right.
In those days, you used to play up at the Melbourne Hotel, I think,
for
residency, and he'd be dragging me along to many festivals that you'd do up there, and of course the Manly festivals. So that's why I consulted with him on what we should play tonight.
Sounds like your father has very good taste.
Well, again, he's got a very wide cross-section of music that he listens to, but I can assure you that your albums feature very, very heavily in a 4,000-plus album collection.
That's very nice to know.
But, in fact, I did call my father and I said, "Look, what should I play tonight?" And he said, "Well, the quartet album, A La Barnard," which seems quite appropriate given that you're heading back to a restaurant down in Crow's Nest. Because if anyone that doesn't know this album cover, Bob's featured, looks like, out the back of a restaurant, and he's in the full restaurant chef garb, and he's opening up a beautiful silver platter, and what should be inside? It's probably a brass cornet, and that's the classic album cover in black and white, of course. And then looking, how would you describe that, Bob?
Pensive
on the back? The back?
The piano, you can only see my head there, but I was sitting at the piano with my hands on the keys.
I see. He's joined by the late Chris Tapperell on the piano, Wally Wickham the bass, and of course the late, his brother, Len Barnard on the drums. The quartet album, captured live at the Paradise Jazz Cellar back in 1982, Just Friends. Well, one reviewer, Bob, from Pennsylvania once said, "Bob Barnard has the cleanest and most cliche-free cornet sound I've ever heard." So what I want to know is, when you were coming up, how much work did you have to do to be able to improvise in such an original way? Is that something you worked on, many hours practice? How many hours a day are we talking about?
Well, no, there was never a lot of practice.
You're working enough to to develop your skill.
Especially after I came to Sydney, I worked with Graham's band from the early 60s till practically every night, you know, for many, many years. But I learned in the early days, I used to copy the Louis Armstrong solos, and they were a big influence on me. I learned things from those that, you know, I'd play something and I'd copy it and say, well, how can you do that? You know, you're not supposed to be able to do that on that chord. And, you know, I learned a few things like that, but I've always had an ear for melody, and I've always loved melody and ballads like that last song. And I just do it.
It's just a beautiful ear.
I try to make it different.
Your career has spanned over 7 decades, but for a moment, can I get you to stand back from your own career and maybe ask you about Australian jazz in general? In your opinion, has it peaked, or if so, when did it peak, and where are we at today?
Boy, that's a question too. Well, I think the Australian jazz musicians are pretty well up there with the best. You know, in fact, the Swaggy records years ago were very, very sought after in Europe. All the European fans just loved the Australian jazz sound. And they still stand up to it now, even after all the years later. The you know, the obvious ones like the Don Burrows and George Collar and James now, of course, they're absolutely world standard. Mm. And a lot of the players here are too. It's an awkward question, that, because, you know, I go to New York quite a bit and play with some people there that are just wonderful players, and nobody's ever heard of them.
Yes.
And you wonder why. It's just, I don't know why it is, but
so many great players, and maybe just not enough of an audience to hear them.
Maybe that's it, yeah. I don't know what the reason is, but it's a damn shame. But the Australian jazz scene is fairly healthy, I think. It's unfortunately, the younger population aren't particularly interested in it, but maybe there'll be a revival one day.
Performing with John Sangster, what do you think made him stand out as such a great composer? Like, what was different about him?
Well, he was brought up in the same school as me. Well, I was brought up in the same school as him. He was a little older. And it was a Melbourne-based thing. But he just had a great imagination, and he was brave. You know, I said to him, how did you learn to write for strings? And he said, oh, I didn't. He said, I just sat down and wrote it, you know. Because things like that you need to learn how to do. Mm. But he just did it. And, he was very good. One time we did a session. It was for The Lord of the Rings, and it was a string quartet in the studio and me. And we were playing some kind of a ragtime, you know, that kind of thing with the strings playing. And, of course, I'm being a jazz player, wasn't playing it exactly the same as the string players in the lead string player went up to the podium where John was and said, the trumpet player is not playing the same as us. And John said, he's playing the jazz. And the guy said, oh, okay, and walked away. Then he came to me and said, you're Bix Beiderbecke playing in a pit orchestra. Thanks, John. And that sort of explained it all, so I just went ahead and did. And it was a nice track that we did.
I saw you in another book, actually. I don't even know who compiled this one, but it's fairly recently released, and listing quite a number of players who were born in 1933. I just thought I'd go through some of these to see whether you've actually have ever played with them. It's quite a cross section of jazz. Mm-hmm. People like John Handy, Sadao Watanabe.
See, I play with him.
Nina. No,
played golf with him, sorry.
Played golf with Sadao Watanabe. Nina Simone, David Fathead Newman, Quincy Jones, Cecil Taylor, Bill Hardman, who else? Michael White, the violinist, Ben Riley, the drummer, Wayne Shorter, Gene Harris, who we just heard earlier.
Right, yeah.
Of course, yourself, Frank Morgan, the alto saxophone, who spent a bit of time in prison. Yeah, it's interesting, all this cross-section of jazz players, they're all different styles.
Well, I'm in good company there.
You certainly are. The 1933 really was a good year.
Absolutely. I agree.
You've got a very musical family too, Bob, but tell us about them, because there's a couple of of, is it your son's playing the guitar in
That's
London?
Right. Yep.
And then his son plays the drums, is that right?
No, his brother.
His brother, Adam, is that right?
Adam, yeah. That's right. Well, my mother and father had a band, and by the time Len, my brother Len, was 10, he was playing the drums in the band.
Mm.
You know? And then I started when I was 14, I did my first gig with the family band. And I guess it's all in the genes, you know, my two sons. And my grandsons are also excellent musicians.
Yes, you had them up in Manly as well.
And we did an album a while back. I'm just trying to look for it here. It's called Three Generations.
Okay.
We were going to do it when Len was still alive, but we just didn't get around to it. So when he died, we said, well, okay, no, let's do it.
Is that the one you did down at the basement?
We did a gig down
there. Oh, you did the gig.
With Rebecca, okay. Len's daughter,
yep.
and my two sons and my grandsons. And it turned out really good.
Bob Bernard, happy birthday. It's been fantastic chatting with you in the studio.
It's been a delight to be here, Frank. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Frank.